This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Welcome to Dig on America, where we speak truth to power. Every week, we give you the dig on how American history, policies, and media created the social and political issues we face today. DOA is independent media supported by listeners, but they'll tell you we're just fake news, deep state propaganda, funded by George Soros, the Clinton Foundation, BLM Marxists, and...
Jabba the Hutt.
Brenda Gordon.
Ooh.
The Oracle. Barbara...
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Say, yeah, I thought you were going to say Barbara Gordon from DC Comics.
Isn't that what's it called? What did I say?
You said Brenda.
Oh, it's Barbara?
Yeah, it's Barbara. Brenda got a baby. Barbara be Barbara Gordon. Welcome everybody to Dig Out America. This is Jason Dutch. I am here with the man with the cap, the skull cap today. Michelangelo Famiglie Ding Dong.
I have survived your COVID. And I am back with more power.
And the double upside down 666 sign of the Antichrist there, apparently.
How dare you? This, and for you audio listeners, please ignore Dutch and his ridiculousness so early in the show. Behind me is the Sage of the Six Paths. This is his dude.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's an anime thing. You wouldn't understand.
I wouldn't. You're right. How are you today, Mikey?
I'm feeling a lot better. I'm down 20 pounds. I lost all of my muscle tone, which is great. And I didn't have any of like the smell or taste things. I just like had a like 103 fever for like 3 days. And if I couldn't break it that last day, I was like, I gotta go in.
Did you get a booster or no?
I was literally trying to figure out my days off to figure out when I can get my booster. And
that
I
might be
sick.
It though, because you got vaccinated before I did, and I got vaccinated in July. So like, I'm supposed to get my booster like in a week or two. So you might have just been late for that booster, and they, you know, the deep state got you. They got you. They got to get you back into CVS.
I think I got the Megatron variant.
Yes.
Which is...
instead of the Optimus Prime variant.
Yeah, I didn't get the Optimus Prime one. That one was already gone. And then Bumblebee is so hard to get a table at these days.
There's only one variant per person these days. So everybody gets the new... You know, you get your own variant. I want to get the Count Chocula variant.
Ooh,
that'll be... Chocula. Yeah, that sounds tasty.
No, the variants for COVID are going to start being like people's names for like different Kush and other like weed strains. It's like, oh, dude, just ran into that Pineapple Express, man. It was something else.
Got me them Bart Simpsons. So with us today, guys, we have two women running for Senate. So Screw you, all you people who say we never have women on the podcast. We got two of them for you tonight. Double dip of women running for the Senate. So we will go left to right on my screen. First, let's give Natalie center stage, if we will. And let's meet Natalie James, who is running for United States Senate in Arkansas. Hi.
Hi, everybody. How are you doing?
Hello.
Well, we're doing good.
Good. In our household, we got the bumblebee version of COVID.
Oh, no.
Yes, we got vaccinated and New Year's hit. And I guess it just decided that it was perfect to come in and say hello and give us a new year hello. So it went through me. Now the little humans have it. And so we're doing double duty, running back and forth. But luckily, everybody's vaccinated, mild symptoms and everything else. So vaccines work. They're doing their job. Yeah. The symptoms aren't as bad because I'm seeing a lot worse going on in Arkansas. It's pretty bad. We just had a little over 10,000 cases today. In the last week, we've had maybe 70,000 cases.
Oof.
Yeah. Welcome to Arkansas.
Welcome to Arkansas, home of William Clinton and his saxophone. So, if you would give us 30 seconds or so elevator pitch. Why are you running for Senate?
Why are you running?
Angry moms. We need more angry moms to put those in our leadership roles in the correct way. Make sure and remind them that they're supposed to be leaders. We can't sit here and continue to ask and demand for current legislation to actually represent us if we're not actually taking a seat at the table. So it's time for us to take a seat at the table, demand our expectations, and let them know this is what we want and how we want it to happen. And the only way, it's just like you treat any other relationship. I feel the relationship between people and legislators is broken. And so you need to make sure you have open lines of communication and set your expectations. And right now, our expectations are really, really, really low compared to what we're being given. So we have the ample opportunity to make a big change here in America, make a big change for everybody and our little humans in the future.
That sounds like socialism to me.
I'm gonna be very, very pedantic here. I love your Arkansas accent.
Is it an accent?
What? Yeah. Is it an accent? Yes.
Because
Arkansas is such a weird spot. It kind of sounds like East Texas, but it also kind of sounds like Birmingham, like south, but it's like a very subtle blending of them. I like your Arkansan.
Everybody says Arkansan, but we say Arkansas.
No, you're from Arkansas.
Yeah, we say saw. We saw it in half. No.
It's not our Kansas. It's your Kansas.
I know.
I hate you. I hate you.
Well, since we have two guests today, Mikey, why don't you do the honors for the good doctor?
And now coming to the stage, everybody get your... No, I'm just saying. Jillian has also joined us. Jillian Battino, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Give us your 30-second elevator pitch. Why are you running? And what people need to know about you.
Okay, so I am also a mom. I have six kids, three girls, three boys, 15 to 26. And I'm a physician. My husband's a physician. And I'm running because about half of my time over the last 10 years has been spent working locally, with women to fight breast cancer. And the other half has been spent in the global health sphere in the nonprofit world, working as an affiliate with a nonprofit in the under the UN umbrella. And I started realizing very slowly, and then all of a sudden, like an epiphany kind of slam dunk on January 6th, these crazy parallels between, what I was seeing in the developing world and what I was seeing at home. And I mean, you know, things medically, like really bad breast cancer that could not be cured because of a lack of access to healthcare. And I would see that in Nicaragua or Guyana. And then again, right here,
Nicaragua,
central Wisconsin, Nicaragua.
Yeah.
And then,
it's an inside joke here. Don't worry about it.
And then there was January 6th, which happened like right after a very similar thing in Guyana. And, you know, there where that happened in Guyana, there was this kind of, wow, I'm so, you know, shocked to see this. This would never happen in the U.S. And then, you know, 8 months later, we're facing something even, you know, just as bad in the U.S. And I realized that I was uniquely prepared for this moment. And angry mama here as well. I'm not going to leave my kids on this planet without working my tail off to make sure that it is here for them and that they have a better life than where this ship looks like it's headed.
Perfect. And you are, you said six kids, so part-time or part-time Mormon? That's so, okay. We reserve the right to joke here. Let's get the show started out. What we do is we play a game to kind of break the ice. For those viewing on YouTube, Jillian is in rural Wisconsin, so it's a little. We need to get the infrastructure bill implemented now, so we can get that rural broadband out there. We passed it. Now let's actually implement it and distribute the funds appropriately. But in order to do that, we need to break the ice. And to break the ice, we're going to play a game. That game is called 4-3. Sit, hoot.
Bing bong.
Four down territory. So we will ask you four questions. You will give us four answers. These are quick, non-political, silly questions and answers. And since there's four of us, we will allow you ladies to each ask a question of each other as well. So I will start it out just to get the ice rolling. And I'll start with Natalie. The ice rolling. Get the ice. Yeah, get the ice melting. I will start with Natalie. Natalie, when you were a child, what was your favorite cereal? Breakfast cereal.
This tells us a lot about a person. Yeah. answer
remember, this is a deal breaker for the your future constituents votes.
They're right? All watching.
Okay, well, I didn't have one favorite. My favorite was Rice Krispies Treats with Frosted Flakes mixed together. So that was my favorite.
Rice Krispie Treats cereal?
And, yeah, not the treats, but the Rice Krispies. And then you mix it with the Frosted Flakes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Like a bowl of diabetes.
Yeah, and then my dad would put like a spoonful of sugar on it, and the sugar at the bottom of it.
So this is a distraction. I'm sorry. I swear I haven't smoked today. I will as soon as we're done. But one of the worst ideas someone's ever had was there's a restaurant, I think in Seattle, they like a little creamery, and they make ice cream out of cereal milk. So, you know, like the delicious milk after you have a bowl of cereal, they use that to make the ice cream out of. And I was like, I can get Cinnamon Toast Crunch ice cream? Oh, what
did they do with all the cereal?
Well, they just kind of like take the milk and then they just crunch
well,
up
they
like
eat
a
the
handful
cereal
of-
first.
I hope not.
A spitty spoon.
It's a community spoon, too. They all use the same spoon. Yeah. That's now we know where we got the Omicron variant from. So
there we go.
Darn you, Seattle.
That's when the Starscream variant comes in.
Mikey, do you want to go flip back and forth or stick with one? However you want. You pick.
Let's all attack Natalie, shall we?
Okay. Be nice.
I'm putting you on a deserted island and you get one TV show to bring all the episodes with you on. Which show are you going to watch on the island?
All right. I'm older now, and I've been rewatching shows that we used to grow up with. It's controversial, but Cliff Huxtable, the Cosby Show, is freaking awesome and phenomenal. And watching it now, I get the adult jokes that were put into it. And let's just say, I don't have my parents. Let me watch that. And I had six kids.
I am a strong believer that Bill Cosby turning out to be an ass doesn't take away from Cliff Huxtable being a role model. So that's my opinion on that. Others can disagree. Yeah. Jillian, would you like to ask Natalie a totally rando question? And remember, she's going to return the favor. So.
Okay. All right. So if you were to be reborn in the 1960s, what city would you choose to live in?
Oh,
actually, let's go for that. Let's go for like the 50s or the 40s, something a little more distant.
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. For me, that those time frames.
it's a bit limited.
You have two cities.
Would I still be a woman? Oh my gosh, that would be difficult because it's not too much you could do back then. We were kind of like, hold on, where did Bo and Rainbow grow up, and where did they have all those fun like fun hippie cults? Where did they have those majority?
California.
Yeah, maybe somewhere out there in California in the hills, just chilling and relaxing and, you know, doing all the fun stuff. It wouldn't be anywhere near the rest of the general population.
Nowhere near the southeastern United States. That's for sure.
Definitely.
I choose the moon.
Mikey, why don't you grab the last question?
Oh, yeah, I guess it is four down. Let's see. I already did movies. Let's go with, we'll go back to childhood. Favorite Saturday morning cartoon. You only get one. Don't try to cheat.
I'm not. Schoolhouse Rock.
Oh, good answer.
Yeah, learned a lot there.
What's your
and that someone didn't like that answer because they started
that was a little human calling.
That's nowhere. That's okay. This is real life that shows that you're a mom. All right, so there's a little bit about Natalie James. So Dr. Jillian,
just Jill's good.
If you were going to be on any medical show on television, what would it be? Which one would you pick?
Ooh, got
any
her.
Medical show?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the doctors or you know, or you. ER.
I'm gonna say MASH.
MASH. Oh,
good
okay.
answer.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. MASH. Mm-hmm. So, would you be friends Big with fan. Hot Lips Houlihan, or would you be her her nemesis?
I would be Hot Lips.
Hot Lips would be X from the show. Absolutely.
She's out of there. Yeah. I definitely, that was a major favorite for me growing up. I think, you know, yeah. Great show.
That was very high pitched. Mikey.
Yeah. And we are only Dutch. We're only like two people away from Alan Alda. I've been trying to like get a hold of him.
Oh, really? Like, I didn't even know he was still alive.
Yeah, he's still alive.
Alan Alda?
Do not put that energy out there.
Do not put the evil on me, Ricky Bobby. Don't Alan do Alda, that. You got to come on the show now and prove that you are still kicking.
Oh, my goodness.
Mikey, your turn.
What was your favorite game at the arcade?
What was that called? Galaga.
Know.
It was okay. There you go. Yeah, with the star shooters.
Yes.
Yeah, that one.
Low key.
I wasn't
hard
very
game.
Good at the arcade. I mean, you know, I tried Pac-Man. Wasn't for me. Yeah, that was definitely.
Well, they had.
I was a little better at that.
Well, they had skee ball, you know, the little sandbag tossers, all kinds of stuff at the arcade. It didn't have to be a video game.
No. I couldn't do that stuff. Hand-eye coordination, not well, it got better in high school, but yeah. You should see me play tennis.
Tennis, I think tennis is a made-up sport. No one's actually that good at tennis. It's got to be CGI. I've taken a tennis racket and hit a tennis ball, and it goes flying way outside the line. So I don't know. I don't I think it's a left wing conspiracy. There's no way anyone actually plays tennis.
It's not an easy game to play.
I can play home run derby with tennis, but that's about it. All right, Natalie, you want to ask a question?
Sure. Since we're talking about games and sports, what sports did you play growing up?
Oh gosh. Uh-oh.
Football, obviously.
Yeah. Rugby.
I played field hockey.
See? More close. Rugby on ice.
Yeah, I went to a Quaker boarding school and we had to play a sport, and so I played field hockey.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. That's cool.
Did they put you on defense?
They put me in the goal.
Oh yeah.
Oh my goodness. You're like, nothing's getting through me, baby. Doing them all the brick wall.
Oh yeah, it was fun. It was painful, you know. Those balls would fly and it was hard. It was a little like candy cane kind of stick to stop the ball with, and mm-hmm. you know. Field hockey. I was pretty bad at it. I you know, I also ran. I still run. I can do that. 2 feet on the ground. I like it.
Figured that one out. I never understood why they allowed children to play field hockey when it's literally a bunch of people with elderly people canes and a pool and a pool cue, and they say, "Here, hit this at each other." And I'm like, "That's not a game. This is dangerous. This is not a sport.
It's like stones. What are you talking about?
It's just take this club and then hit this golf ball. No, this billiard cue at the other girls. This is your game now."
Makes you really good at avoiding obstacles.
I think it's like rooted in Native American culture. I was just watching, I was on the treadmill and I was watching Last of the Mohicans, and they were playing something that looks a little bit like field hockey.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more violent than what we played. They were hitting each other with the sticks. We weren't allowed to do that.
Yeah. The origins of this of the game can be traced back to the earliest civilizations of the world, but the modern game of field hockey was developed in the British Isles. The modern game was started in England in the mid-1800s, and the first formal field hockey club, the Blackheath Football and Hockey Club, was formed in 1861.
There you go.
So stickball is a very old game. Well, they got Egyptians in here in a picture. Egyptians playing this game.
Oh my goodness.
Okay. Don't use a brown ball in Egypt, because that's a very quick game. Just it's just gone in the sand forever. Mm-hmm. It seems like we have lost Dutch. Natalie, did you want to do one more question for Jill? Did you want me to go?
Let me think. What's a good question? I'm going to let you pick the category. You pick the category, Jill.
Okay. Let's see. Not politics. Okay, let's do mom task. Momhood. If that's something we probably can connect on.
What is the funniest what's the funniest mom moment? Funniest and grossest mom moment, because you know.
Perfect. Okay. I got the story here. This is a great one.
You guys are mom smiling right now. You guys are both mom smiling, and I don't like it. Knock it off.
You know.
Okay, like you guys can't tell anyone this story.
It's just the three of us here. It's just us.
Keep it between us. Okay, so one of my boys was in diapers. Aww. and I was baking brownies, and I dropped some brownie on the floor, and I picked it up and popped it in my mouth, and between my fingers and my mouth I got a whiff of it, and it was a little turd that had rolled out of her diaper.
What did I just walk back into?
It was not brownie.
Oh no.
And I did not swallow. I just want you to know.
Sounds.
But don't tell anyone the story.
Don't tell anyone the story.
This cannot get out.
Live on YouTube.
It's okay. These are the mom stories that we all have, and they are all pretty just as bad. Believe me.
So lesson is: do not eat brownie off the floor when you have children in diapers.
Yeah, or don't eat anything off the floor, because they all sit in their diaper and it rolls out like Cheerios.
It rolls out. Yeah. Oh my gosh. There's this. They don't know what to say.
Dutch has a little guy who is always keeping him on his toes. So
I have four kids. Aww. My littlest is and sorry for that there. We blew a fuse and everything went out and then came right back on, but I think it blew up my microphone. So Mikey will be happy. I might have to join your Yeti gang because my microphone is not working. But luckily I keep a spare, because I am prepared, podcaster.
And a little production note there, Dutch. You're coming in a little hot. You might want to pull it a little away. Just a little.
This, I only get the quality equipment, okay? But my youngest is nonverbal autistic. He's five. So he has a tendency, no matter who is over, he'll go to the bathroom, and then just not put his clothes back on and walk back out into the living room. You know, and it's like, I'm like, I'll say, where's your pants? He's just like jump, and he's autistic, so he likes to jump on the trampoline. He's just there trampling butt naked. And I'm like, and most people are okay with it, but once, you know, you never know. Luckily it's COVID and not many people are in the house.
He's like, I'll never tell. You gotta go find them. Good luck. Yeah.
That's totally normal behavior here in rural Wisconsin, just so you know.
And Kansas, so.
Well, we got half the United States covered in this show: California, Illinois, Wisconsin, and Arkansas. But most of them, mostly in the central time zone. There, it looks like. Is Arkansas central or eastern?
Central.
Oh, okay. So it's not as late for you as I had
feared. No.
Okay. Okay. Cool. So.
It's not yet.
I believe, are we done with four down? I know I missed, or do we still have one more question?
I took care of it.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool. We got to do a candidate pick question, and that's how we got onto the topic of don't eat things off the floor when you have a kid in diapers.
No. Or in general, that's a good rule.
Yeah.
By the way, real quick, shots out to Rayvana and to Delvin Cox, our newest patrons of the show. So, yay for them. Thank you for joining the show, Tim and Frustrated, our future patrons next week.
I'll spot you guys. Don't worry about it.
At $500,000 per episode.
Just kidding. You're on your own.
Yeah. But here's the first question I'd like to ask to you future, hopefully, women of the Senate. Let's start with the lowest hanging fruit, healthcare. And we'll start with the good doctor, since, you know, she's in healthcare as a profession. So what are your thoughts on the U.S. healthcare system, and what changes need to be made to it?
So, I mean, our healthcare system is failing and has failed a lot of Americans. It's one of the reasons that I'm in the race, and one of the things that I think is essential to address in order to address so many other problems. I'm a supporter of Medicare for all, and I'll define what I mean by that because I think it can be really messy. It's not good terminology. Basically, what I mean is that from the day your mother decides that she is going to have a baby, which may not be the day that she gets pregnant, is my specific point there. So from the day that your mom decides she's going to have a baby to your last day, you should have comprehensive health care. And that should include everything from surgical services. And we'll start actually with preventative health care, prenatal health care, surgical services, prescription drug coverage, addiction care, mental health care, end of life care, you know, hospice care, all of it, everything comprehensive, complete coverage. You know, right now we're paying about $3.6 trillion in this country for healthcare, and we have a lot of people that are not being adequately cared for. Even people who do have healthcare, they have high deductibles and high, monthly payments, and they basically cannot afford to utilize their health care, or they have to buy catastrophic health care coverage. So it's not working. My economy group, my buddies that I put together to help guide me on these kind of questions, say that we can provide health care for every single person living in this country, citizens and non-citizens, everyone living in this country, for $3 trillion. And save 0.6 a year, which is, you know, over the course of a decade is $6 trillion. And we don't really have anybody coming up with great ideas about how to decrease our spending. I think healthcare is a way that we can do that. Eliminate the middleman, provide coverage for everyone. We can do it quickly. And I think we have to do it. I think it helps us address things like racial inequity, disability and elder care, our veteran care, and so many other essential issues, even things in, you know, that matter here in Wisconsin, I'm sure matter everywhere, you know, small farms and farmer economic stability can be helped with healthcare. You know, student kids coming out having to deal with student loans where they don't need to be dealing with healthcare. So I think that we have to absolutely address it, and I would support a single payer policy. And that's where I stand.
And I have a lot of international friends. I do a podcast with a guy in Sweden, a guy in the UK. And let me tell you how embarrassing it is. Every single week for the last 2 years, getting single payer healthcare rubbed in my face. I'm just like, God, can we please just get this done so I don't have to listen to these two? Because like, especially when it comes to stuff like you were talking about when the mom decides to have a baby. Yeah. Paternal and maternal leave, like it's barely a thing here. Like, what is it? 6 weeks
for the
mom only, and the dad is like whatever your job will allow.
And some of the guys, majority of the guys, have it also as well now.
Oh well, that's good.
Yeah,
but it's always been super frustrating to listen to my friends brag about. Oh yeah, broke my arm the other week. Oh, went in, got a cast, did this, they said it. They actually paid me because I had to use public transit. I was like, what? I'm sorry. What did you just say to me with your human mouth? Gil, I think you flipped on us. Oh, and looks like it's going to be me and you now. Oh, there we go. Nope. It's just going to be me and you. Did you want to answer the same question about healthcare?
Yeah, sure. Healthcare, same thing. I feel that we should have single payer healthcare extremely, but we should always have healthcare. Or it shouldn't take a pandemic for us to see that actual healthcare can work if we just come together. You're seeing how COVID testing and how this is happening, and it's free. It's universal. It doesn't matter what you make or anything else. Well, in some cases, sometimes if you say you're traveling, they hit you with a $3,000 bill for four COVID tests that you have to have.
What?
But yeah, oh, it's a lot of things inside of that. If you have insurance, they're hitting people, making them pay their copays. Like my sister's a teacher, and she just got hit with a $300 bill, $90 worth of copays for her kids to go back to college. And she's had to spend that amount of money on a teacher's salary unexpectedly for them to be able to go back to college. And so what we have is the Affordable Cares Act. It already works. It's already in place. And there are things that we can do to improve it. But I don't feel scrapping it and starting all the way over is the best way. We need to have something in place to cover and take care of those right now and meet those immediate needs while we expand it and work on working out the kinks. Everything has kinks and nothing works the first time around, but you have to work on it and build on it and sometimes take away from it to figure out what's best for everybody. And what's best for everybody is definitely having healthcare. So it's extremely important that we have it. We have to make sure that we defend everybody and make sure that they have pre-existing conditions covered. Me, I'm a pre-existing condition. I'm walking psoriasis. So sometimes insurance, they don't want to cover it because it's expensive. You want to go get a biological or things like that, and you have a bad flare up or you have a psoriatic flare up. It's extremely bad. It's difficult. Sometimes the healing process isn't what it's supposed to be. If you get a little sickness or if you get a big sickness and it's cost a little bit more, everybody should have access to healthy healthcare. Otherwise, we wouldn't be seeing all these morbidity cases with COVID and what's going on and people having four conditions that increase their rate of dying with COVID because we have poor healthcare. But healthcare also includes what you eat. And that's something that's not talked about. Our diets are so poor in America to where people are just dying left and right because they don't have access to food and quality food to take care of themselves because food is medicine, regardless of what everybody else thinks.
Yeah. So. You get out what you put in, and if you live in a food desert and it's like the Shell gas station and then there's a grocery store
20 miles away
or even 3 miles away, but you don't have a car and there's and if you have to walk it, I mean, somebody gonna be missing a grocery cart. That's all I'm gonna say. I'm just saying somebody's gonna be short one cart. I'll use the same one. I'll bring a bag with me. And but it's and coming from St. Louis, you see a lot of that where people have to travel miles and miles. I mean, St. Louis has a pretty robust public transit thing. Once you're actually like downtown in the city, the bi-state runs pretty well. But it doesn't run all the time. So if you need to get to, I don't know, an appointment or something like that, but your appointment's at 7, that's not always an option for you unless you want to leave an hour and a half before time. So that just adds an additional layer of difficulty for people to get into things.
Mm-hmm.
You having fun down there, Dutch? He's over there trying to crack the matrix. He's got 14 screens going. He's got some fingerless gloves. Yeah. I don't know. Some like he's got a Bill Belichick cutoff hoodie.
Hey, he's doing it. He's doing it. And that's another thing.
Big grease smear across his face. He's just right on the here he is now. Here is Jason Dutch, everyone, live from the deck of the Nebuchadnezzar.
And we got to think about preventative care too. It's healthcare. People don't think about that too. That saves a lot of money if you focus on keeping people from being sick. You don't actually have to use your insurance in the first place if you don't get sick. So America's just a little bit backwards, like you said, but we're getting there, hopefully faster than later.
So this goes out to both you ladies. Like, do you think something like Natalie was saying, like a transitional kind of thing from the bogus system that we have now into something that's single payer? Do you think Medicare for all and Medicaid for all is like one of those first steps to get us towards towards that eventual single payer option? Yeah, Joga.
Yeah. Do you want to, Natalie, did you want to answer that? Who are you talking to? Sorry.
Both of you.
Okay.
Yeah. Yay.
Right now, like I said, something's better.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I've already said it. Something is better than nothing.
I kind of missed a little bit. So I missed a little bit. So I don't want to,
I'll repeat it. It's no problem. I can repeat it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I heard, but I just missed some of what Natalie was saying earlier, you know, when she was describing her position. I mean, I'm sure that everybody would love to flip a switch and have an excellent solution that takes care of everybody right now. And I think the thing that we need to realize is that, you know, this is a democracy and there are people that disagree with us and that compromise is the name of the game in getting things done sometimes. But to me, you don't need to compromise before you get to the table. So I believe that you come in with the highest goals and what you believe the benchmark best program would be. And you fight for that because you know, you're not gonna get it. You're gonna have you know, Rand Paul and Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and these folks that you have to deal with that are going to chisel away at our, you know, at our Build Back Better plan or our Medicare for All plan or what have you. So, you know, there are certainly countries that have flipped the switch and done it in one day. I think the Philippines is an example. And there are people who are going to push back because dark money, big farm coming in and paying big dollars to make sure that they maintain their position of unethical, astronomical, you know, commoditized healthcare wealth. And we're going to have to fight against that. But to me, it can be done. And I don't want to go in asking for the middle ground. I don't want to go in asking for ACA expansion or Medicare expansion. I want to go in asking for healthcare for everyone. Because, you know, right now, supposedly every kid in this country is covered. You know, we have CHIP, we have left and right. We have all these little programs to kind of patchwork it together and band-aid it together so that every kid has healthcare. And yet 5 to 7 or 5 to 9% of kids are not covered. And the majority of those kids are Black and Brown kids. And, right, you know, we just have to be realistic about our inadequacies. And I think if we fight for a program where everyone is in and no one is out, then that is the very best that we need to shoot for. And maybe we'll get it eventually. But yeah, I want to go in asking for what I really think we need.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's what you should do. I'm sorry. I believe in shooting for the stars and hopefully landing on the moon. So,
yeah. So are either one of you ladies up for just like, I don't know, uprooting your entire life and moving to Kentucky? Because this Mitch McConnell thing, I'm getting about sick of it. So if y'all could just go and, you know, just get him.
Might be able to go to Bowling Green, Kentucky, and chill out and hang out for a while. You know, say, hey, how you doing, Mr. Mitchie Poo? We got some stuff to say.
If you could just beat him once and then move back to where you're from, he'll be done. He'll lose all esteem and he'll be done.
I don't know if you heard, but gangbang in Little Rock was a real thing. I don't need him thinking that that's that little show is kind of, you know, prolific here. So that was just on HBO back when we were going up to high school. So we don't want Mitch to think that we're going to come and beat him up. That might give him a heart attack. But yeah, somebody does need to run against him.
No.
Our table.
No. Well, I didn't even mention Ron Johnson, right? I mean, we have this terrible situation in Wisconsin that needs to be cleaned up. So that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. He has not done one thing for the people of Wisconsin in his years here. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a terrible situation.
I think we're all in the same boat with horrible, I'm not even going to call them lawmakers. We're going to call them horrible corporate law pushers, because that's basically what they do. We have Tom Cotton and John Bozeman. And Tom Cotton, we know how outlandish he is. John Bozeman is just like him, just really quiet. He doesn't say anything. He's like, oh, let me copy off of your paper, Tom. Boom, going to do the exact same thing and vote the same way. Yes. Now let me Homer Simpson back into the corner.
Just into the hedge.
That's him. So it's difficult running against an enigma, a figment of everybody's imagination, because nobody knows who he is. 35% of Arkansans couldn't even pick him up out of a lineup.
I have been wanting to grow a hedge ever since I saw that meme, but the years it takes.
And the love it takes. You got to get out there and talk to it too. Grow little plants.
I gotta go out there and play classical music or something.
Mm-hmm.
One big issue that we love to talk about on the show is education. Did either one of you have any ideas? Because I hate a lot of things about our education system, and I hate even more us not really doing anything about it. Like, everyone has an idea, but then what happens is we just push the can down the road and we just keep on doing the same old, same old. So you guys have any ideas for any reformation of the school system as it stands?
I want to hear Jill, because we're 48 in the nation. So, I need all the tips and points we can for improvement.
Well, I mean, to me, it comes down so often to funding. And I think that there's a fundamental flaw in the way that we fund our educational system, expecting about 45% to come from school districts. So, we have kids that are living in poverty and in neighborhoods and districts where property taxes are, you can jack them up as high as you want. If the value of the property is not, sufficient to actually create any revenue, all you're really doing is contributing to the perpetuation of poverty.
Right.
You're not actually creating... Yeah, you're not creating funds for the school. So, I think that there should be a series of expectations and benchmarks that have to be met, and the states have to meet those funds. We need to come up with a situation where you could, put on some, put your hands over your eyes, put a bag over your head, sunglasses, whatever you want, and take you into any school in the country, and not know whether you're in an affluent district or you're in a non-affluent district. The education is the key to the future. It is the thing that will level the playing field. It is the only chance that our children have. And I think that we are seeing so much of the result of inadequate education right now within our political system, and the what is tearing at the fabric of this country just has to do with ignorance, poor education, and a lack of opportunity, perpetuation of poverty. It's just tearing people and our country apart. So we've got to fix it. And I think it comes with, I think we have to change the way we're funding, because it's just, 45% coming from your district. I mean, obviously you're going to have kids who don't have music, who don't have IEPs when they need them, who don't have AP classes or special ed classes or language immersion. So, Yeah, I think we can fix it, but we have to, you know, crosses that line between federal and state responsibilities to have a federal position mandating what is done in the states. But if you overlap, sort of geographical information system mapping, and you put poverty and you put death rates or like life expectancy, Medicaid expansion, mm-hmm. all of that stuff is going to be worse in Republican run states where they're simply intentionally perpetuating poverty, and education is one of the primary tools for that.
Yeah, there's nothing easier to do than if you want to keep somebody down is to just put them in the worst school possible.
Yeah.
Just the worst, like it's barely, I mean, the state says it's fine. So they got a fine education from their public school, but you know that's a nothing degree. You know that does nothing for those kids. And it's like, I grew up in St. Louis, but I've been bouncing back and forth between here and Chicago like my entire life. And every time I would go back to St. Louis, I was like a year and a half in front of the other kids. And it was always a weird leap when I would come back up north, but it's bad in a lot of places where it's like the kids around me have no idea how far behind they are. And this was in middle school. So I can't imagine how the high school, how are they going to be able to do the higher level maths later on when, I mean, like, it was there's two books, or there's like a row, like for every row there was like one book that everybody had to copy down the questions from and then go back to their seats and then do the, and that was a day in class. That's unnatural. Meanwhile, probably 25 miles into the county schools, they're using tablets.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Everyone has a Chromebook for their homework and stuff like that. Like it's something's got to give.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, and welcome me back. I think we have Big Haas here as well. Oh yeah, we do. Look, it's a full program now. As my fuse went out again, the problem that we have in Chicago, this does exist in Central California as well. But it's, I think, a little bit more pronounced in Chicago. Is like you'll have, or in the Chicago suburbs specifically, you'll have like one school that is 3 to 4 miles away from another school. And it's like two completely different worlds. You know, the kids hang out, they go to the same, you know, mall and shop at the same Foot Locker, but one of them's graduating doctors and lawyers and the other one's got a 60%,
yeah, 65% graduation rate.
You know, and then you look at the demographics, and you're like, okay. I mean, what do you think? Like, Natalie, what's the path to do that? Is it just reallocating property tax money to make it even between the schools? Is that enough?
It's going to take a lot more than that, and it's going to take some outside the box thinking. I come from a home of educators where we have over 170 years of combined education experience. My mothers were teachers. My grandmother was a teacher. She was one of the first teachers in Blacksville, Arkansas, went to U of A, one of the first Black African-Americans to graduate from the U of A system in the 50s, and came back and brought them back to Newport. So it's going to take people that are pioneers and then come and do the work that needs to be done to get us up to a 21st century. And that's the biggest thing. Like you said, we shouldn't have those disparaging differences to where different classrooms don't have a Chromebook and some classrooms have to share one book. That's unheard of. That's maddening. When I know in our state, we got a $1 billion surplus. Other states, it might be that on a federal level, yes, we might need to have some federal overreach, because in some cases, federal overreach is good, especially when it has to do with our future, because if we don't take care of our kids now, who's going to take care of us in the future? If we don't educate them properly, we are going to die sooner. And if you want to be an old evil person, well, guess what? You need somebody to help keep you there. And if you're not educating your next round of doctors, your CNAs, your nurses, your nurse practitioners, or anybody that's in the medical field to keep you alive longer, you're not going to have a good chance of doing that. And if we don't put and pour in heavily into education, we're not going to be able to do it. You have the military budget, $768 billion. If you allocated maybe $80 million a year towards higher education, to where higher education is free and it's not a burden, because back in the 70s, back in the 60s, it was $5,000 for a four-year degree. Unheard of. Now we're paying that per semester for one class. That's 3 hours you're paying that. And then you're going into insurmountable debt because of this to make sure that you have proper education. You have children, again, you have school deserts. People don't talk about that too. You have only one school available and you have a lack of staffing because you don't want to pay your teachers to educate and mold and grow your future. It's so many different things that are culminated to so many cogs on that wheel that are broken, that are making that wheel not work. I look at majority of this and look at our nation and how it works as a system, as a big watch. And when you have one piece that's broken in that watch, it tick, 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 slower and slower, and it doesn't work. And especially doesn't work in the future. And that's the scary part. So that's a big, big reason why I got into this and wanted to make sure that we're advocating for those who are the most innocent, that don't have somebody to advocate for them. Pre-K should be free. All schools should be free up until you turn about 22. And that means that you should have an associate's program, trade, vocational, and an undergrad. Yeah. Not everybody goes to college. I didn't. I became a realtor and I've done other business certificates. I went to college for a second and I ended up becoming a mother. And I said, well, let me step out and hop into the private sector and go to corporate. So my background's a little bit different, but college isn't for everybody. We need to make sure we have trained, skilled laborers, and we're not pushing that either. We don't have vocational schools like we used to when I was growing up. We don't have economics in majority of these classes. It's just so many things that are being removed, simple civics, which is why we have this issue of people not voting, getting out, doing what it is that they can do, that go in and culminate with education. And education is like one of the pillar foundations of our campaigns and should be of majority of us on how to fix it so that we can have a better nation. Because if we don't educate ourselves, we're going to be left behind and the world is just going to continue to laugh at us like they've been doing for the last few decades.
Do you guys think that, to both of you ladies, do you guys think that, because it seems to me education is often neglected by the Democratic Party, and I can't wrap my head around that.
It's not just left out by the Democratic Party. I'm not going to say that.
We don't expect Republicans to do it.
Yeah, but it was left out by all parties. It's an afterthought and an aftermention. Nobody thinks about it on the forefront. Everybody wants to think about reacting towards the fear propaganda that's put out there and everything else. So let's roll back and say, Democrats, we don't get a fair chance to, you know, actually say our message because we're having to put out so many fires over here that they do all these brush fires. We don't get a chance to actually say, hey, this is where we stand. And then if we say it too loud, then of course, people like me were labeled as, oh, you're just too obnoxious. You're too pushy. You're overbearing. And you know, all the other things that people say. So it's a
angry black woman.
Exactly. They're yelling at us. No, apparently to you.
Why are you so angry, Natalie?
Because you guys love
persons. Look at Jillian. She's so calm and reserved.
I'm like, 6 years, you guys don't understand. You have to fix education so we can work on climate change. It all goes hand in hand. We don't fix it, we're going to die. You should be scared and angry too. But I can't tell everybody that.
What are your thoughts on that, Jillian?
Well, I mean, I think I don't know that Democrats have necessarily ignored it. I think it's more that we've been ineffective. I mean, here in Wisconsin, our governor came from superintendent, you know, of schools to the governorship, and he's been very invested in trying to address educational inadequacies in the state. And honestly, it's just so difficult. There's so much pushback and so much division that it's hard to make any progress. I also think that maybe some of it has to do with the fact that the Democratic Party has gotten very wrapped up in some elitist kind of ideas, you know, like things that are really important and that we really need to fight for, but maybe have taken up too much of the oxygen in the room, and that educational needs have gotten left behind in that. I don't believe that there's a limited actually, I shouldn't say this because it doesn't sound very scientific. I was going to say, I don't think that there's only so much oxygen in the room. I think that we have more bandwidth than we utilize. I think that a lot of leaders get in and they're just, I don't know, they're not doing the job. Part of it has to do with campaign finance reform and the fact that they're spending 30% of their time fundraising instead of working their butts off for the people while they're in office. Yes. So maybe if we could clean that up so that people could add 30% more work just because they'd have that time, that would be great. But it seems like folks get in there, they're complacent and they don't get the job done. Mm-hmm. We need people who are, I mean, I love hearing Natalie talk actually, because she's got that, you know, that mom thing. I get it. You know, like if there's a crazy thing happens when you grow a human, you know, if there's a thing on TikTok, I made my own people. Yeah, it's like you have little progeny. You know, there's this huge responsibility that you feel compelled to make absolutely certain that the world is right for them. And this world is not right. And I think we need people in there who are really scared, who are not like, I want to be president. But they're like, no, I want to be a good mom. And part of being a good mom today, it turns out, is being a good senator. Mm-hmm. That's what we need. People who are really scared and motivated and smart and energetic. And I think that a lot of what has happened with a lack of addressing our educational system is just poor leadership.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, I agree. Meet our other co-host, Big Haas. Welcome, Big Haas, back from his personal training exploits. So
I believe you met my fitness consigliere.
Yeah, yes, Michelle.
You guys are too much. You guys are too much.
Look over there. Both of you promised. We promised you guys we'd get you off of here because you guys are, you know, a little bit later than it is for me. So we will keep to that commitment, and we will jump into the dig. But before we do that, real quick, just in case we lose any of you or me, because tonight seems like the internet's on fire. I guess we're being attacked by aliens or some sort. Yeah. Perhaps Joe Biden's reptilians.
Tunnels flying around, you know, wreaking
Dutch. Back. Pay your damn bills.
Yeah, that's what it is.
As long as you log in and say, I promise to pay later, they'll turn you back on. They'll kick it back on.
I blame the landlord. I blame the, you know, Joe Biden's reptilian alien people. They're just, you know, they're crashing through satellites. That's got to be what it is. George Soros is up there flying around with Bezos and ruining the world.
It's the flying spaghetti monster.
Underground, he's doing that. Say, get it for it. Get your conspiracy right.
Yeah, Marjorie Taylor Greene is up there shooting the space lasers. oh my God. Oh, but God. So we will get into the dig. But first, and we'll start with the good doctor this time because Natalie went first last time. Let the people know.
Hold on one sec. Mr. Haas, is there anything you would like to ask these young ladies?
How do you feel about taxing the churches?
Taxing churches? I think I'm down with that. How do you feel about it, Natalie?
I am 100% down with that. I think we should. But wait, hear me out. Because the only way, if we all do a little bit, this is what Kelly Crow says, if we all do a little, we don't have to do a lot. Well, if the churches did a little that they were supposed to do and actually get out, serve the communities and take care of the vagrant communities and take care of those in need, house the unhousable and feed the communities the way that they're supposed, you know, the loaf and bread and all the other good stuff, and even a fish. If they did that, then guess what? They get an incentive and they get a tax break. If they don't do it, then you get penalized and you get taxed. If you have a private jet, yes, and you're not taking people to appointments or to doctor's appointments, cancer treatments or something like that to save a life, yes, you get taxed. If you're not sitting here using your Rolls Royce to go out here and feed the needy, yes, you get taxed. If you're not helping somebody's college tuition, yes, you get taxed. If you're not helping somebody with pre-K care, you get taxed. And they should all offer free daycare.
Take your time, Pastor. Take your time.
Okay.
Let me get my organ out. Hold on one second.
Okay. So you're going to get out of here. You need to make sure you're doing what you're supposed to. for the community. You're supposed to build your nation. That's why you get that tax write-off. And if you're not,
I wish somebody heard me in here.
Okay.
But I'm going to step on some toes today, Deacon.
They're outside of abortion clinics, which is healthcare for women, telling us what's wrong. You're going to hell for doing this and doing that. And they don't offer any type of other solutions. They need to be able to provide diapers. They need to provide free daycare, because daycare is an insurmountable cost. And it costs as much as how much you pay for your rent for majority of people. I'm a single mom. I was on vouchers when I had my youngest daughter, my oldest daughter, excuse me. And I had to decide, making $10 an hour, can I pay my car note? Can I pay my rent? What else can I afford this month? And that's a living thing that people have to sit here and deal with on a daily basis. And if these churches stepped up and did their parts instead of asking for their tithes and offerings, then great. Those that
building fund.
Oh, yes. And those that ask for actual talents instead of tithes, because it's in the Bible, ask for your talents, tithes, and your offerings. Not everybody has money and has 10% to give. If that person gives their talents, then you need to utilize that and you get a tax write-off for it. I feel it should be something like you get a coupon or something for off your taxes for the X amount of dollars. If you generate over $100,000, well, really, if you generate over $20,000 worth of revenue for your church besides building expenses, and you're not using all the building expenses, yeah, then you need to start getting taxed on like some type of level like that, because it's ridiculous. These preachers, these ministers, these deacons, and everybody else using the community, just like a lot of
our prophets. Don't forget the prophets.
Yes, prophets. using the communities and using the people the way that the politicians are. So you're sitting here bleeding the backs of people over and over in multiple different ways and not benefiting, want to complain about pulling up your bootstraps when they've cut off all the straps. So,
You know what really sucks is that you don't have an opinion on that. I don't understand. How you have absolutely nothing to say, Natalie, when it comes to the church.
Because I grew up in the church. I'm a preacher's kid. What can I say?
All righty. So let's do this.
Good question, Big Hoss.
Dr. Jill.
The progressive side of me.
I come in. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Clay Thompson pulled off the bench.
He pulled up for three. Dr. Jill, if you would, let the people know where they can find you, how they can support you, you know, all your socials, that sort of stuff. And then we'll do the same for Natalie.
Yeah. So easy peasy. So Bettino for Senate is the website, and you can, click on the Twitter, Facebook, Instagram icons on there and get access. But you basically, Bettino for Senate is my handle on everything. So should be easy to find. And we're on ActBlue if you want to support. And we also have a huge internship program. We have about 40 young people that have either volunteered or interned with us. So if you're interested in doing anything from data analysis to social media to political and policy writing to communications, whatever you want, we have a place for you to help you get started in your political advocacy career. So BettinaForSenate.com, there we are. That's actually .us. I think.
Oh, yeah. Dang it. Hold on. I'll fix it. Boom, boom. Now we can do the screenshot. And we're good.
Right. Yeah. There we go. All right. So I am Natalie James, running for United States Senate here in Arkansas. I'm one of those loudmouth, angry moms. I'm bringing grit and determination and just a little bit of common sense with some expectations and some demands for our Senate. You can reach me on all social media at jamesforarkansas.com. And of course, I need your support. I need your donations so I can continue to reach the masses and the rural parts of Arkansas, which are extremely important. Because if we don't have our rural parts, we're not going to change for Arkansas. Four is actually spelled out. Arkansas, but it's changeforarkansas.com.
Of all the states, I thought Arkansas for sure would have put the four on there.
We got to reach all of our kids. We have to reach all of our rural areas. Everybody says that we are a red state. No, we're an undervoting state. And we have 22% voter turnout. Guess what? Ooh. To me, I look at that as 70% opportunity, honey. 70% opportunity. I like those odds. That is not even a D. That's a C last time I checked. So I'll be happy to take at least 70% of those chances and those votes that haven't decided to get out there. And the only way that's going to happen is to continue to outreach, continue to hit this state like I have been. We've been almost 40 counties. We have 75, and we're going to do that twice. It takes your funds so that we can continue to fund the state and get out there and get people engaged and get them excited and let them know that they have some real voices that are going to Washington, because I'm just excited about Dr. Bettina. Anyway, I'm excited that I got to sit down with her. She is an amazing candidate. We have a lot of things to do, but it's going to take your help, your support, and you have to donate. We don't have the millions. I don't know, like everybody has in their head, the money comes from the people and what you believe yeah. in. And if you want somebody to have a voice for you, for the whole United States, you have to support us, because if we don't go away, we have to fight against dark money. And that's what she was talking about with the whole 30% yeah. of our time is allocated to actually fundraising. And back in the 70s, that wasn't the case. They didn't have to do that. They could run a Senate campaign for $30,000 to $40,000. Now we need anywhere between $1 million to $5 million. In Arkansas, to run a good Senate campaign, it's about $1 million. And so if $1 million of you donate a dollar, you all do a little. You don't all have to do a lot. So give me a dollar or two or more. Be happy to take that at jamesforarkansas.com.
And if you can send 10 million, send 10 million. Of course, you can't send that much. But anyway, yeah.
FEC violation. Yeah,
that would be illegal, but, you know, you can fight. Give $1 million to 1 million people and then.
So, the views and opinions of Jason Dutch are not those indicative.
Yes, they are.
They're his and only his.
Real quick, though. You guys both have large geographical districts, though, too, the way that it appears to me. So, like, you can't run an AOC campaign like she ran. Like, she had a lot of donors, but, like, she was – her district is, like, 14 blocks. Yours is – both of yours is extremely large. And
40 counties.
Yeah, it costs gas money
yes.
to do that. So, definitely check that out. And I hope that you guys enjoyed being on together, because I – you know, usually we have one candidate on. We've done two before, but, you know, I think that we definitely need more women in the Senate. And, you know, just based on following you guys, it looked like you weren't people I would at least, you know, not support. So, you know, we always want to learn a little bit more. And I think that that's been fantastic. And I really appreciate it. We'll get a chance to get to know Big Haas a little bit more here in a second. Haas, if you would like to, in your messages, per usual, you have a little something that you can read to get us started with the dig. As he looks for that here he goes. So we'll give Big Haas time to catch up to the rest of the world. Oh, and unmute himself.
While I'm looking for it, the ladies can tell me where they stand on critical race theory.
Oh, that's a great 30-second question. Thanks, Big Haas. Let's just pare it down a little bit. Is there components of CRT that you guys think should be looked at in public schools? And if so, which particular ones?
You have to let them know which one you'd like to talk first.
It's like 100 and something of them that they want to remove. So, yeah. But I think that all components of history should be in there. And if it's uncomfortable, guess what? It's just like I was thinking about this morning when somebody brought it up. History is like Alcohol Anonymous. You have to acknowledge that there's a problem, see that there's a problem, and move forward on the problem. You can't sit here and say, oh, it never happened. They were indentured service. Oh, this, that. You have
Irish.
Yes. You have to acknowledge that they
were Irish.
You have to acknowledge that they were, yes, playing golf with our children. Yes, they were using children as gator bait. Yes, how they came up with some of the common terms of MFers and things like that, that they currently use now, where that actually came from, where book breaking came from, and how majority of plantation owners were part of the LGBT community. They just didn't want to say it because they were the ones that broke the books. But we have to make sure that we talk about that and explain that to our children, how it's wrong, how it's bad, and how not to go back there. Because if you don't talk about history, it has a bad, quick way of repeating itself. If you look at all civilizations and the fall and rise of civilizations, when you don't address your problems and you sit here and sweep them under the rug, you tend to dwindle out real quick, fast, in a hurry. And I don't want to go anywhere. And we're reaching that cusp of 275 years. So I kind of want us to fix what we have, acknowledge, and say, okay, kumbaya, let's move forward. Let's get this together and let's get in here and make this world a better place.
That's a fantastic answer. For Dr., if you don't mind me just switching it up a tiny bit, because you are a doctor, and I think that since we're going to ask you one last question, I'd like to kind of divert it a lot. equally, and this came to my mind because what you see in school boards right now is people crying about CRT and crying about masks and vaccine mandates. Specifically on the mask and vaccine mandates, you know, what would you like to see the school systems do? What would be your advice as a medical professional?
Okay, so I have CRT in my head.
Well, you can feel free to answer both, but you know, just give us your opinion.
Okay, I just want to quickly comment on the CRT thing. So, sure. So first of all, I feel very strongly that the GOP called the GQP on a recent conversation, but I feel very strongly that they intentionally utilize buzzwords to turn us off. And I think that CRT is one of those. I think abortion is another, defund the police is another. Mm-hmm. And they identify this terminology that is, I think, kind of elevated or amplified by young people who are sending a powerful, important message. And then they make it, they villainize it, they weaponize it. And CRT is part of that. I think we need to fight back on that. The fact is that we have to teach real history in our schools. And when they call it CRT, I think we ought to just shut that down and say, you know, that is that's something you can get a PhD, a master's degree class in. You know, we're talking about history. We're talking about factual history, and the history of this country includes the fact that we annihilated an existing civilization when we arrived. And that's a big part of, of what we see here in central Wisconsin. I just have been spending a lot of time with our tribal nations. We have 11 of them here in Wisconsin. We don't even talk about that. So we need to talk about that. We need to talk about slavery. We need to talk about Jim Crow. We need to talk about new Jim Crow. We need to talk about all of it in a factual, respectable way, and stop with this nonsense of this traumatizing our white children. It doesn't. And anything, you know, I have to be.
So I feel traumatized.
My youngest son is Black. Our community is not predominantly, it's a lot of white. He says he's the only real Black kid, is what he says. He's the only real Black kid. And, you know, if it's hard for anybody, it's hard for him to sit there and listen to it and like feel the eyes on him. That's how he talks about it at home. He's like, and he doesn't want to have to explain it. And he doesn't want to have to deal with the questions or whatever. So it's hard for him. If you think about, it should be hard for everybody, because it's a terrible thing that happened. And if we don't eat that up, then we're going to do it again. And this is like the history of the world, right? We have been annihilating with genocide, whether we're talking about African Americans in this country, or we're talking about Jewish people during the Holocaust, or we are talking about Native Americans, or we're talking about Kenya or Uganda or Ethiopia for that matter. And Palestine, I mean, all of these conversations, it's like the same thing over and over again. It's a sickness that we have somehow perpetuated by not admitting what we're doing wrong and how disgusting and atrocious it truly is. So that's my CRT thing. I'm not going to let them call it CRT. It's called history, goddammit. It's not CRT. It's history. Yeah. So that's
Since you have no opinion on that, I like you guys have no opinion on anything. But briefly though, when it comes to, and I appreciate both of those answers. But briefly though, just your doctors, you know, speaking as a medical professional, the relevance and importance of children, where, you know, and mask mandates in schools, just like your quick position on that.
So we don't know what this virus is doing to us. It is a, you know, viruses are a complex thing. They evolve. They have complex effects. You know, the immune system responds in complex ways and can do terrible things. You know, whether you're a healthy human being or an immunocompromised human being, young or old, you know, no matter what race you are, this is a bad virus. We know that we should be taking care of our neighbors. I mean, this is, you know, so this drives me crazy, the hypocrisy of the Christian GOPs who are pushing back on all of the, I mean, the hypocrisy in every conversation. I think that we need to educate our public, learn something from this, first of all. Learn that we did not do a good job preparing our public for a pandemic. What didn't we do right, and how can we do it better in the future? We need to start educating people much earlier, the same way that we have sirens on the first Monday of every month at noon here in Wisconsin. We know, okay, that's the siren, it's going off. We should have been doing that sort of thing for the pandemic. This should not be a big deal. My kids are fine with their masks on. This should not be a big deal. You know, vaccine mandates, it's hard to, I would, when my, it first started out with all of this, I didn't want vaccine mandates. I want people to be intelligent and trusting and kind enough to understand that they needed to get vaccinated. But, you know, now that we don't have that, then we're ending up with vaccine mandates. I don't see an alternative because there are so many people getting infected and dying. Now, are vaccines completely safe? Well, no, they never have been, right? Whether you're talking about MMR or HIB or shingles vaccines, you can get Guillain-Barré or all these, you know, complications from vaccines. We need to take care of each other. We need to trust our scientific institutions and do better preparing for the next round of next round of pandemic, whether it's this virus or another one. And that's going to be teaching people that masks are part of our future, unfortunately, and you ought to keep one around and ready for when you need it, get comfortable with it, you know, be resilient and healthy as a community, because, you know, take care of your neighbor. That's what it comes down to. What's happened in the United States has happened because we haven't been preaching that. We've been preaching this independence and not been preaching love thy neighbor, and, you know, be responsible. So, and again, a big answer, sorry, but yes, where's those damn masks? And I'm sorry about the mandates, but I don't see any other way. There's too much foolishness.
Yes.
So just so you know, because if you're up late, it's your own fault.
They haven't complained about the time. So I keep them as long as we can. I like them. They're fun.
I like them too, but stop trying to silence me. All right, so... I'll tell you what, let's...
White fragility.
Stop trying to silence my voice. This is reverse racism. If you... see, now, first of all, let me tell you something.
Oh,
okay?
I'm
going to tell you something here. Watch this.
Buckle up, everybody.
See, now, Big Hoss thought he was slick.
Big Thoss.
Big, yeah, that's my reverse racism.
Thick Hoss.
Yeah, Thick Hoss. He thought he was slick. You know,
with
what he
two C's.
He said, Big Hoss said, I'm not done eating my dinner yet, so I need to find a way to get them talking for another 6-7 minutes. Let me shove this corned beef down my throat. We know what you were doing. You ain't slick, but now you are slick. So you have something that you'd like to read for us? But that'll bring us into the dig.
There we go.
What'd you have? It look good.
It is. It's not roast beef. Shit.
We just talked about that. Don't eat stuff off the floor.
It's not shit. I dropped my fucking cigar.
while the house burns down around him.
Ladies, it's fine. His kids are out of diapers.
Okay. We're usually way more organized than this. Actually, no, we're not. But anyway,
it was like sliced beef. Beef slices. I don't know what you call it. Anyway.
Beef slices.
Was it like from a roast? Like, did you just like have a cow somewhere? And you're like, hey.
From a roast or something. Okay. Hey, my wife made it. I don't know.
He did it. It's called Hungry Man.
I came home and whatever she put out on the countertop for me to eat, I put in the microwave for 90 seconds and I ate it. True.
Smart man.
Buffalo balls. I don't know.
Rocky Mountain oysters.
Rocky Mountain oysters. Hey,
when I get home from training, I was there from four to ten. When I get home from training, is whatever's there is getting consumed because I'm starving.
Big on America.
Well, there you go, guys. That was the first half of last week's live stream with Dr. Jillian Bettino and Natalie James, who are running for Senate. Dr. Bettino running in Wisconsin and Natalie running in Arkansas. So thank you for tuning in for this show. If you'd like to catch the second half, it'll post in a couple days, probably towards the end of the weekend here as we sit today on the 13th, I believe it is. So that'll post in a couple of days. It'll be one episode up on like Spotify or iTunes or, you know, Google Podcasts, whatever podcatcher that you are using. Now, if you are an audio listener to this show, we would love to have you become a video watcher of this show, where most weeks, this week, if you had tuned in, you noticed there was some crazy ass problem with the stream, and weren't really getting the greatest video feed this particular week. But generally speaking, a lot of fun to join us live. You can do so by going to youtube.com/digonamerica or twitch.tv/digonamerica. Now, some of you might have followed us at twitch.tv/DOA podcast. That has been changed to twitch.tv/digonamerica. Finally was able to get that put through. So definitely do that if you could. Also, if you're on iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating. We'd appreciate that very, very much. Like, super love it. And last but not least, if you could support the show, we do run 100% off of listener sponsorship. You can do that at patreon.com/digonamerica. Again, patreon.com/digonamerica. Thank you so much, guys. We love you for checking out the show. Please share the show with a friend. Grab somebody's freaking phone. Type in Dig on America on their podcast or YouTube and tell them, hey, you know what? This show doesn't suck all that bad, and to check us out. We love it. We love you. Thanks for tuning in. See you soon. Peace.
Dig on America.
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Proof the deep state is real in America.
The media said what? Ha, ha, ha.
Patently false. Fake news.
Your organization's terrible.
This is the kind of thing that just tickles my balls.
Want to have a rousing discussion about truth, honor, patriotism?
The end of the Republic has never looked better.
They be fighting the power, talking about social issues, politics, you know what I'm saying?
Three punches!
I enjoy Big Hoss.
And I'm smoking my cigar, of course.
Am I allowed to talk?
No, not right now.
You crazy Dutch bastard!
Mikey, you're getting a bit upset here.
Mikey, you can edit.
My favorite podcast.
Kick names, take ass.
There's no going back. You've changed things forever.
Get in trouble. Good trouble. Necessary trouble.
Now you see that evil will always triumph because good is dumb.
Big on America.
Hi, I'm Eric.
And I'm Aisla.
And together we are the hosts of the Bicurian Podcast.
Bicurian is our answer to the polarizing culture we live in.
Tired of feeling under siege and looking for ways to get involved? Then come be a part of a different way of thinking.
Everything from politics to geek culture to current events that polarize us as a society, we explore multiple ways of looking at things. Please check us out at Bicurian.com and follow us on your favorite social media platform of choice.
Hey, come back!
Big on America.